cell phones interrupt the proceedings, so we are requesting that members don't have their cell phones on silent. Let's welcome our friends from the media, let's welcome colleagues, and let's welcome ex-board member Mr. Lubisi. Just to indicate, honorable members, for the record, that our program for today has Mr. Lubisi. It will then be followed by Ms. Makoba. The third would be Mr. Mavuso. And the final witness scheduled for today is Professor Makube. So that's the program for today. Also for the record, honorable members, it is important that we state that our letter of notification to the board stands. Namely, that members of the board have been invited and were welcome to participate with us from day one to the end, to afford them an opportunity to hear firsthand input from all witnesses and afford them an opportunity to test that input immediately. That arrangement was reconfirmed with Professor Makube's legal team yesterday morning before we started. That he would have an opportunity after every witness to pose questions if he or any other member of the board so wished. And that stands. However, honorable members, we all know that the professor walked out together with the rest of the board members yesterday and therefore did not participate in the proceedings or exercise his right to cross-examine the three witnesses that appeared yesterday. The board isn't here again today, and clearly they won't have the right to cross-examine witnesses whilst they are not here. But in the interest of fairness and transparency, when the professor and the board do take the stand, we'll afford them the opportunity to raise questions that they would want to have raised with potential witnesses, because it was of their own making that they walked out of the meeting. So I thought, let's put that under the record so that there is clarity, that we will continue to ensure that there is fairness, that there is freeness, and that there is ultimate transparency from our side. Having said that, as the chairperson, Mr. Lubisi, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or a committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Sir, you have a document before you that, if you agree, if you agree to the oath, sir, I would like you to raise your right hand and repeat the words, "I swear by Almighty God that the evidence I shall give will be the truth,
will be the truth,
the whole truth,
the whole truth,
and nothing but the truth,
and nothing else but the truth.
So help me God.
So help me God."
Sir, if you could sign the document and bring it back to the table. Thank you, honorable members. That deals with the formalities. As has been the agreement, we will hand over to the evidence leader, Advocate Vanara. It is 5 to 10. It is 5 to 10. We will request of you to attempt to get through your business by 11 o'clock, at which point we will open up for members and or the board to have an opportunity to also participate. So that's going to be the process going forward. An hour for the evidence leader and an hour for the rest of us to participate. And again, members, we have asked that if we limit it to 2 questions each so that everybody participates, and then we'll always have a second and a third round. If we could stick to that process, it's going to make the proceedings so much smoother for all of us. So that's really how we're going to conduct our business today, going forward until the end of our proceedings. Honorable Van Damme, I see you wanted to say something.
Thanks, Chair. I didn't want to disturb you, but I'd just like to take us back to the program. On the program today is at 4 o'clock, we're due to hear from Prof. Maguve. Now, there were media reports in a press conference where he said he will not be appearing before this committee. He views it as a kangaroo court, and all sorts of things were said. I just wanted to ask whether we've received any official confirmation from Prof. Maguve that he will not be appearing before this committee. And perhaps, in the interest of fairness, whether we could confirm from him whether he will indeed be appearing before this committee today. Thanks, Chair.
Let me answer the first part of the question. We've not received confirmation either way, but can I also make a suggestion that at 4 o'clock, when it is his time to appear, we then deal with the second part of this matter. Otherwise, we'll be preempting and doing all sorts of things. So, just to answer the first part, we've not heard indication either way, but at 4 o'clock, we will then deal with the matter at hand as it presents itself. Happiness?
For record people, it must be noted that the invitation of the committee stands.
look at Vanara, you have the floor until 11 o'clock. And we will take notes, honorable members, and we'll only engage after they have concluded their business. Sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning to committee members, the guests, to Mr. Lubisi. Mr. Lubisi, can you, for the record, state your full names, please?
My name is Mashangu Ronnie Lubisi.
You were a board member of the current board of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, correct?
Yes.
You made a statement, a 15-page, it's a 21-page statement signed on the 6th of December 2016 at Centen CSC. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct.
And you do have in your possession this document. Is that correct?
Yes, I have it in my possession.
And with your permission, the document could be shared with the members of the committee.
Definitely.
Can you, for the record, also state your academic qualifications?
I am a chartered accountant by profession.
Can you tell us, when did you become involved with the board of the SABC?
I was appointed initially on the 25th of March 2013 in the interim board of the SABC. And then after the expiry of the term of the interim board, I was appointed in the full board on the around September 2013.
I am in possession of your statement, and I see on page 2, paragraph 6, you indicate that on the 25th of March 2014, you were appointed by the president to serve in the interim board. And you are now saying it was in 2013.
Yes, you can call it 2013, not 2014.
So for the record, we can correct the statement to reflect 2013 instead of 2014.
Yes, we can.
In your statement on page 3, paragraph 13, you refer specifically to a board meeting that was convened on around July 2014.
Yes, it was a bilateral between the board and the minister.
Can you take us through what happened at that meeting?
Okay. After the announcement of the new ministers, we had an opportunity of meeting the minister in July 2014. At that stage, it was the first meeting which we had for the minister to introduce herself and the board to introduce herself to her. And during the meeting, the minister had an opportunity of addressing us, and at that stage of the board, we were busy dealing with the public protector's report. And in that meeting which we had with the minister raised concerns about the issue of the acting chief operation officer, Mr. Hlaudi Motsoeneng, that he has been acting for too long, and then she needed him to be appointed permanently. At that point, the public protector's report was not yet addressed, and it has made some unfavorable findings against Mr. Motsoeneng.
Okay. Just to take a pause there, you refer to the minister. Who is the minister?
The Honorable Faith Mthambi.
Okay, you may proceed.
During the meeting, the minister said that the board had problems, and she directed questions at each one of us to indicate what was our problem, because their perception was that the board was dysfunctional. The former chairperson of the board, Ms. Ellen Chabalala, and Mr. Motsoeneng mentioned that from when they had the opportunity to speak, they indicated that the major problem of the board was specifically myself and Professor Khumalo were mentioned as some of the people who were causing problems for the board. And from my analysis of the situation, there was an indication that they had a prior meeting to discuss these issues, because we had expectation that if the minister meet the board for the first time, the minister will just mainly indicate priorities to the board, so that what would be a focus during a term, so that the board can also have the view of her focus area. But this meeting was used to specifically attack some of us, and it was indicated to us that we were the problem. And then the main issues which were raised there, specifically in relation to myself, was that we were using the audit committee to advance our own agendas. And my thinking to it was the reason behind that was the fact that we're dealing with the public report, with the public protector's report, which they didn't like to implement. So how the public protector's report was handled at that point was that each committee was allocated components of the report. Audit committee will deal with financial issues, HR with HR issues, to discuss how to handle and implement the report. I was the chairperson of the audit committee by that time, and I think it was the objective of the attack was to intimidate us, not to come out with inputs to the board in relation to the report which were not going to be favorable.
Okay, we will get back to the how the board dealt with the public protector. But for now, we're still at the July meeting. On page 3 of your statement, paragraph 14, the last sentence, perhaps just before the last sentence, the third line of paragraph 14, you say the former chairperson Chabalala and Motsoeneng mentioned that I and Professor Khumalo, one of the board members, were the cause of problems. And you say, incidentally, Chabalala, Motsoeneng, and the minister came late to the meeting and walked in together. You further say that it appears that they had discussed the board prior to the meeting. Now, who are you referring to, they?
I'm referring to the three, to the minister, Ms. Ellen Chabalala, and Motsoeneng. That's the three. It was Motsoeneng.
The CEO, group chief executive officer. Or the acting
At that point, if my memory serves me well, the CEO at that time, it was Lulama.
Then you say the public protector report was a cause for the treatment that you were receiving at that meeting. What is the basis for that?
My basis for that was that it appears that they were not happy with the approach which we were coming up with in the input to the report as such, as an audit committee. The reason I'm saying that is because they attacked me as a chairperson of the audit committee, that the audit committee has an agenda. And the audit committee is not me as a chairperson, because we have other non-executive board members as part of the committee. But it was put as if I'm the only member of the audit committee. The reason why I'm saying that, why were the other members not mentioned as having an audit committee agenda? And subsequent...
Okay. Who were the other members of the audit committee?
At that point, it was Msagaza and Chris Schneider, the other audit committee members.
You may proceed, sir. There was an allegation leveled against you. You mentioned that in page 4, paragraph 17, of a conflict of interest. Can you take the committee through the genesis of that allegation, how the board handled it, and what were the outcomes of that process?
I think it would be very important to indicate that in that meeting with the minister, the issue which they raised was the as part of the issues which they raised there, it was indicated that I had interest, and then I was using the audit committee meeting for my own agendas. That interest at that stage, I was not aware what they were talking about. And subsequent to the meeting, I was not worried that much by the issue of interest, because I knew that I didn't have interest. But I was worried by the issue of using the audit committee as a tool for achieving what. And then subsequent to the meeting, I wrote an email to the company secretary requesting her to send an email to the board members, all the board members, and request them to indicate as to what are the agendas and what is the audit committee doing wrong. And and I indicated that if ever there's anything, then the next audit committee meeting will look at it. They must make submissions. And then we did that. The company secretary issued the email to all the board members, and none of them responded. So I assumed that there was not a problem. And the issue of the conflict of interest, it was mentioned there. How the meeting was run is that accusations to specific board members were said that you Ronnie Lubis, you have a conflict of interest, and other people are doing this and that and that and that. And the issue of conflict of interest came in subsequent to that. After that meeting, nothing happened. And the chairperson changed. Ms. Chabalala was taken out, and Professor Mabguve came as an acting chairperson. And when Professor Mabguve came in as an acting chairperson, I was written a letter saying that you have conflict of interest, The letter was not specific as to what is the conflict. It is just say that you have conflict of interest, and then I have written to the minister to take you out, as I've recommended to the minister to take you out as a chairperson of the audit committee. It must be borne in mind that the chairperson of the audit committee is appointed by the minister. So I was not told anything. I just received this letter that we have written to the minister to recommend that he takes you out as the chairperson of the audit committee, and will inform you the outcome of the minister's response. And I was not requested to respond or anything. I was not asked anything. I've never spoken to the chairperson by that time. I just received that letter like that. He has made the determination that I should be taken out. It was never discussed by the Governance and Nomination Committee, which looks at the chairpersons of committees. So after I've received that letter, I didn't do anything because, I mean, I was not there to I didn't appoint myself as the chairperson of the audit committee.
The letter that you received, you're making reference to it in your statement.
Yes.
As an annexure.
Yes.
Can you get that letter and read it for the record? Because members do not have, unfortunately, the copy thereof.
The letter is dated the 19th of February, 2015. The heading is saying allegations of lack of compliance with the requirements of Section 75 of the Companies Act 71 of 2008 as amended, Section 53A of the Public Finance Management Act of 1 of 1999 as amended, and Section 17 of the Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999. As amended. It has come to my attention that in your capacity as an independent non-executive director of the SABC board and the chairperson of its audit committee, you have not complied with the legislative requirement to declare your interests in respect of your acting as the auditor of companies doing business with the SABC. It is advisable that under the circumstances, you'll be relieved of your duties as a chairperson of the audit committee as a result of the conflict of interest. I'll inform the Honorable Minister, Ms. A.F. Mutambi, of the above, and I will inform you in due course of her decision in this regard.
From whom is that letter?
Professor Magube, acting chairperson at that point.
You then said you didn't respond to the letter. What happened subsequent to that?
I didn't respond to the letter. Subsequent to that, he wrote another letter. That was on the 2nd of March. The heading is still the same. You see, my letter dated the 4th of February has reference. I think it refers to the same date. I hereby request that you give me reasons why I should not institute an inquiry as a result of the following serious allegations against yourself. It is alleged that you are in breach with the requirements of Section 75 of the Companies Act 71 of 1998, Section 53 of the Public Finance Management Act, And Section 17 of the Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999 as amended. I request you to provide my office with a written reply on or before the close of business on 10 March 2015. If you fail to respond to the matter, will be processed without benefit of your explanation and further participation.
What did you make of that correspondence? What was the allegation that was preferred against you?
After I received the second letter where I was required to respond, I requested them, I wrote back an email requesting them to give me the details of the conflict which they're talking about. And some documents were sent to me. The documents were a resolution of the bid adjudication committee, whereby they were discussing some bids. There were two bids which they were discussing in those minutes. It was a company called Harambe and another company called Mafoko Security Services. And in those set of minutes, there was a resolution that those companies I was listed as an auditor of those companies. And the committee resolved that they should inform me that I'm an auditor in those companies, and so that if any of those companies come to the board, so that I can have a knowledge that I'm acting as an auditor to those companies. And part of the suggestion was that if ever it happens that there can be conflict, that I can resign as an auditor of those companies. And together with that, it was the conflict of interest policy which was sent to me, and also the ethics code for the board. And after I have received that, and then I have never audited those two companies, not at all. I didn't know them. But I was listed as an auditor. I was not concerned that I was listed as an auditor, because previously when you register a company, they require an auditor. So you register a lot of companies which you never audit, because the requirement is that they need an audit letter. So obviously if someone wants to register a company, you log into the office of the nearest auditor and get that letter to register a company. So in those two, I was listed there, but I've never audited them. And then I tried to search the companies, because I didn't have any details about them, and I wrote them. I telephonically spoke to them that there's this problem, that they say that I'm auditing you and I'm not auditing you. Can you confirm that I'm not your auditors? And then they gave me letters to confirm that I'm not the auditors. And during that process, I also requested the company secretary for her to set up a meeting for me with the chairperson with the acting chairperson of the board at that point. And she came back to me saying that, okay, the chairperson is saying, what is the agenda? And I was surprised by it, because he has written me letters. Obviously, there was no question as to what is the agenda. So, I indicated what the agenda is. And during those processes, as we were busy, I was trying to get information about these companies, and the deadline hasn't passed. He has given me a deadline in the letter. I think the deadline was the 9th. And during those processes, a meeting never happened, because I said that I will come back to you and with the dates. I told the company secretary I'll come back with the dates. And the deadline was the 10th. On the 9th, they had a meeting, nomination committee, the governance and nomination committee meeting. And I received another letter, the third letter, saying that due to the fact that you didn't respond by the to the letters which we have written you, we will recommend now to the board that you be taken as the chairperson of the audit committee. And subsequent to that, I responded. I think subsequent to that, I responded and then indicated to the, my response was indicating that I'm not the auditor of the companies. I've evidence, I've spoken to the companies and their, the other company, even their auditors, confirm that I'm not an auditor. They confirm which years they've audited them, and I have those letters. And I received a notice of a board meeting, a special board meeting to discuss, I think it was three of us, board members that will be taken out as board members. And that notice was, it was some few weeks in between because everything I think happened around March. And my response I gave in that meeting with all the evidence which I had, or the two companies which I had, and the supporting documentation which I had. And in the meeting itself, it was strange enough because in the bid adjudication committee, the now acting group chief executive was part of that meeting. And in that meeting, he indicated that he's one of the people, he's himself who indicated that I should be informed that I'm an auditor of the, that company. And he indicated that companies should not be disadvantaged because I'm an auditor of them, that they must not get business from the SABC. There's nothing to do with the, with my clients where they get business. So, and then, but in that board meeting, it was himself who was presenting on behalf of the board. That I have conflict of interest. And after they've, I've given them my response and the letters, they still continue. They say they wanted to vote to take us out, and they voted and said they had a majority of the people who didn't, of the board members who didn't want us there, and then we were taken out like that.
You say us, yourself and who?
It was myself, the late Hope Zinde, and Rachel Kalidas.
So who is the complainant in this complaint against yourself and the two?
In my case, they indicated that it was claimed that the bid adjudication committee in that's what our if you go through the minutes after we were taken out, it was said that the bid adjudication committees informed them that I have conflict of interest, and this is the information which how they got it.
Minutes or to the meeting, but the special board meeting that was convened to appoint the acting COO. Who convened that meeting? And why was it a special meeting of the board?
I think I'll talk after. I didn't put it as part of my statement, but I can talk through it. I don't have documentation in that aspect. In the board, which the acting chief operation officer was appointed as a permanent chief operation officer, we received a notice of a meeting saying that it was going to be a bilateral with a minister. And the agenda, I don't still remember exactly what the, but the agenda was not related to that. It was not saying the appointment of a, I think you can go back and check those the notice of those meetings, but it, the agenda was not saying the appointment of the chief operation officer. There was no documentation for that meeting at all. And the meeting was called, I think it was in the evening. It was around, if my memory saved me well, around 6 o'clock or so in the evening. And then we came to the meeting. There was no documentation at all. And at that point, the chairperson was Ms. Shabalala. She just read a letter. I think the letter was said, I have never seen that letter. It was said to be from, I don't know whether it's from the lawyers of Mr. Mzoneng, saying that he has been acting for too long, and then mentioning some achievements there. He has achieved A, B, C, D, and then now he needed to be appointed. If he's appointed, there are consequences of the Labor Relations Act or whatever legislation, because he has been acting for a long time. And it should be noted that there was no advert for this position at that point. So you would never think even as to what was that we were going to discuss things like that. And we had a very long meeting because it was problematic to some of us. I think the meeting took very long until late in the evening. And then when we're not agreeing, it was said that it should be put to a vote. And then as most of the things were done like that from a certain point, and it was put to a vote. And then it was the majority voted in favor. And it was said that it will be recommended to the minister for his appointment, and then he was appointed just like that, I think, the following day, my understanding.
Okay. At that meeting, did you vote for or against the appointment of the permanent CEO?
I voted against, in the sense that it didn't make sense. I mean, you don't just go in and appoint anyone because he's acting. He has acted for long. The person must qualify, there should be an advert, there are processes, they have policies, even the SABC itself have policies as to how to appoint someone. So those policies were not adhered to. And I don't think this can be challenged. I don't think there's any policy of the SABC which allows a person just to be picked from the street and get appointed. So, I mean, because I'm acting, so I don't think there's any. The policy requires that there should be processes, there should be an advert, there should be interviews. It's a long process. So those processes were not followed. That was the reason why I voted against that.
The board has standing meetings for a financial year. Is that correct?
Yes, it's correct. There's a board calendar.
Now, and of course, from time to time, there will be issues that require the board to meet outside of those meetings, scheduled meetings.
Yes, true.
Now, this was a special board meeting. You were invited. You didn't receive any documentation for this meeting. You don't know what the agenda is. You get to a meeting. Does anybody address the meeting around the agency of this meeting, or why it is a special board meeting?
There's no way it was going to be urgent. Why should it be done in the evening?
I'm saying, did anyone explain, did the chairperson or anybody who had called this special meeting explain to the meeting why the meeting was called as a special board meeting?
Not what my memories serve me well. I don't think it was explained. And
did you ask? Did any other board member ask, but why are we here? Why are we having a special board meeting? I mean, there are costs involved in that you guys are going to be compensated for attending that meeting. So there's cost to the organization. There's travel arrangements. You people had to be taken away, your non-executives, you're taken away from your daily responsibilities. Was this ever a subject of the meeting? Why this special board meeting?
No,
I don't think that was not discussed. You must understand that board this meeting was paraded as a meeting between the board and the minister. It's sort of a bilateral. So it's unfortunate that my focus was not going to be on that. But, I mean, if we go back to the documentation, you'll see that it was paraded as sort of a bilateral. So if the minister's calls, who can say no? You understand what I'm trying to say? So what I'm saying, that was presented as a bilateral with a minister, and then we were surprised, all of us, when we get there, that this documentation were read. We were not even given the documents, because we said that we're going to leak them. They were read to us. So nothing like you have a document, take 5 minutes to prepare yourself and think. There was no time to think.
The public protector report had been in front of the board at the time. Is that correct?
Yes, it was. It was in front of the board that time.
Make the point that there were unfavorable findings against the then acting COO. Did those findings play any role in the decision of the board to appoint him as the permanent COO?
No, they didn't form part of that, not at all.
Why not?
You, at that point, you must have an understanding of that there were components of the board who didn't want the public protector's recommendation to be implemented. That's the reason why.
Whilst on that, who were those members of the board that did not want to have the public protector's report implemented? Can you name them?
I think it would be unfair on them. Don't you?
No, it is not unfair. They were board members. Can you please mention them name by name?
I think it will be difficult, because what I'm saying, that the chairperson, obviously, I would say that he does. He didn't support the implementation, because they took it. I mean, the chairperson at that time didn't support it, because what we have was that when we were running these processes of the public protector, the arrangement was that each chairperson. Will dissect it and come with a recommendation or come with an action plan of how he thinks his area should be addressed. But at the same time, there were parallel processes which, unbeknown to us, which were running, with a Mkunu lawyer being appointed to dissect this report and come with the finding. So those, I think it's very important for you to understand this, so that you understand why I won't mention names. I can pick one or two people. So when those committees have done their analysis of the report and how it should be implemented, I only sit in two committees. I was sitting in two committees, which was the audit committee and the HR committee. In those two committees which you are sitting, whatever those two committees have recommended was not taken into account in coming to the conclusion as to how to move forward in relation to that report. So I don't remember a board meeting whereby it was fully discussed, saying that, okay, who doesn't agree with the implementation of this recommendation? And you must remember at that point, at that time, people were coming that the public protector's recommendations are just recommendations. You are not forced to implement them. So that attitude was also there. But what I'm sure of, the chairperson by that time
didn't support the implementation. That's the reason why, I mean, these two processes were running. And that Kunis report, when it came, it was circulated for board members to comment and look at it. It was just basically saying that not even one of those things, you can go through it itself. It was just cancelling everything of the recommendation.
I don't want to be distracted, but you've mentioned the side process that you did not know about. Are you referring to an investigation that was being conducted by the attorneys called Mtunu?
Yeah, I'm talking about that. That Mtunu's, I don't know whether to call it a legal opinion or I don't know what to call, it.
So what are you saying? The board never took a decision to engage the services of Mtunu in relation to the handling of the public protector report?
The board, I won't commit myself into whether the board have approved an attorney to give a legal opinion. That might have happened. But I don't remember the board saying that whatever legal opinion will be the opinion of the board. You understand what I'm trying to say? Because at the end of the process, that Mkunu report was presented as the opinion of the board in relation to the public protector's report.
So correct me if I'm getting you wrong. You say there was no board meeting, being it a round robin or the actual sitting of a board, where the public protector report gets to be tabled, where you were at that meeting, irrespective of its form, and a decision is taken to appoint a firm of attorneys to look into that report.
It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the activities were many at that point. What I'm saying that a legal firm might have been appointed to give a legal opinion. But the process which the board have agreed on was that the chairpersons must come in with recommendation as to how to implement the recommendations. That process was never implemented. My assertion is that that process was going to be the process, that outcome of the different chairperson was going to be the resolution of the board of as to how the report should be implemented. So what I'm saying that that process became nil at the end because the chairperson or the, I don't know who have written to the public protector saying that, okay, this is our resolution. But my understanding was that that Mkunu's report was presented as the position of the board in relation to the handling of the public protector's report, and it was sent even to the public protector. So what I'm saying that that process, to me, that adopting that report as a position of the board was not a rational thing, because the board had a process whereby the different committees were meeting to come out to map up a way forward as to the implementation of those recommendations.
Back to the meeting where you were appointing the acting COO. The SABC had the skills audit report in place at the time. Is that correct?
It's correct.
That report served before the board at that meeting as one of the issues to be considered.
No, that didn't serve. You must remember that the skills audit was not done by this board, which we're discussing today. It was not done by the interim board also, which I was fortunate because I served in that also. that skills audit was done by the previous board before the interim board before this board. So, but that skills audit was initially discussed by the interim board. That skills audit was also by the time I think it came out that other board had been dissolved, and then it came into the hands of the interim board. If my memory serves me well, the same skills audit, we have presented it to the Portfolio Committee on Communication at a certain point. But the new board, I don't still remember whether the new board have also taken it forward. I have to look at the minutes of the new board.
Did you, as the board, get expert advice from the group executive HR in relation to the procurement process, the recruitment process that you were busy with at that meeting to appoint the permanent COO?
As I've said, that no process was followed at all. So the executive of HR was not involved in the process at all.
Let's move to the multi-choice contract between the SABC and multi-choice. You were a board member around the time that this agreement was concluded, is that correct?
Yes.
Was there ever a board meeting that gave authority to the executive directors to enter into a contract with MultiChoice?
Yes, there were board meetings, but I think I have to give you a background so that you have a better view. The contract with MultiChoice was entered into during the period of the interim board, not this board. And it was not approved by the interim board. It was approved by the previous board. When we had our meeting discussing it, you'll see through the meetings when you get them, is that the interim board didn't approve it. It was coming from the previous approval, but the implementation happened during the term of the interim board.
The relationship or the relations between board members, how would you explain that at your time serving as a non-executive member in the current board?
I think we started well. To be honest, that I'll give you my own perspective. But I think what we should have better give a better, more objective and more independent opinion is if we had a governance review. The previous board had a governance review by an independent firm of auditors, so that gave a better view of how the board operated, and it was our wish, my wish, that the same thing, if it has happened to this board, sometimes it should not have found itself in this position. That report of the governance review of the previous board was tabled to the interim board, and also this board had an opportunity to get a presentation of that governance review. The governance review was showing the weaknesses of the previous board and what were the problems of the previous board. And it is my view that the same problems were still there. And if we have implemented that governance review report, sometimes we should not find ourselves in the position we should find ourselves today. As an audit committee, it is our responsibilities to look at the audit committee needed that review to be done of the board. And I think when I left, we were on a process of procuring a service provider to do the same exercise, to do a follow-up on those recommendations of that governance review. It was a very good report. It was exposing the weaknesses of the board, the relationship between the executive and the board members themselves. So I think I wouldn't be qualified to see how did we perform until myself was taken out. But I think what we see today is an indication of how we've performed. I think we haven't done well, and those previous problems have entrenched themselves worse sometimes than the previous board. Governance was falling apart.
Now, you say governance was falling apart in this board in your presence. What were the issues that made you to come to that conclusion, that governance is falling apart?
I think it's common knowledge that this board has failed. Not following processes. I don't think there was a proper direction to executives as to how to handle it. Executives sometimes becoming the board. I have a strongest belief that the executive members of the board, the executive directors of the board, should not be involved in some issues. So I think the whole setup from the legislation itself, how you appoint your executives, is a problem, and it leaves the directors exposed. So I think decisions were taken without proper documentations. I think the company actually became lost in the whole picture, because if you are a company secretary, you'll give a proper guidance to the board with ensuring meetings like the meetings which I'm telling you about, where you get to the meeting, there's no documentation. You are lied to attend the meeting, told it is this when it's not that. So I think those are clear lack of governance. And the number of meetings which you have, special meetings which you have, indicates governance problems. If you start having a lot of special meetings, a lot of round robins resolutions, it indicates to you that governance is falling apart. You are not in charge. You are not giving directions. And if the relationship between board members becomes a problem, you can't govern effectively. So all those are indications to me that governance was not well.
Sorry, Advocate, before you carry on, let me remind you, you've got 10 minutes.
In your statement, you make reference to an investigation that was done to board members by the company secretary. And there was a report, that report formed the basis for some of the allegations that were made against you.
When we had a meeting, that first meeting with the minister, she indicated that she needed a one-on-one on us because it looks as if there's no good relationship between the board members and the board was dysfunctional, according to her view, which I don't agree at that point. And we were called by her office to have that one-on-one meeting. I won't talk to about the other board members because I know what happened to myself. When I went there, I think it was in the evening. The meeting was set up for 6 o'clock or somewhere. I found that she was not there. I want me to understand she had an urgent call to meet the president, so she was not there. I met a legal advisor and another gentleman. I don't remember her name. And when I didn't know what the meeting was, I thought the meeting was just to establish if there are problems and try to resolve them. But when, to my surprise, when I arrived at the meeting, it was alleged that the company secretary had prepared a report about each board member, and then some allegations were read to me. And part of the conflict of interest was part of those and other things. And after the discussion, I was not concerned by the other things. My major concerns were two, that I have interest and that I was using the audit committee as a tool. And I indicated to them that they must give me a copy of that report and also evidence of what they were alleging.
I'm just interested in the company secretary's report. Was there ever a board meeting where the board took a decision to empower the company secretary to conduct an investigation on the behavior of the members of the board?
No, there was no board meeting. Her report has never served in the board, and any normal board won't do that. A company secretary is your employee. Your employee cannot investigate you. And I don't expect the company secretary to have an interaction with the minister without the board knowledge. So that report went to the minister without the board. If I was a minister, I was not going to entertain that.
No further questions, sir.
Thank you very much, Advocate Manara. Just before you raise your hands, can I just make a slight suggestion, honourable members, that so that we exercise caution. And I will raise it with every input that we have. You are aware in the instance of multi-choice, for instance, that is a document that we are demanding from the board. So I have no difficulty if we ask questions like what was the role of the board in the appointment, was there a board meeting to that effect, but the actual detail, that we discuss that detail when we have the report. But the role of the board, because they were board members, did it appear before the board? Do you recall us approving that type of thing? I will not rule out of order. But once we get into the nitty-gritty, I think we will be skating on thin ice because we don't have that document, for instance, to talk about. So I'm hoping that members at least bear with me with that one, and when we get the board and or the documents, we'd then be able to get into detail. Is that principle agreed upon? Thank you. So I will stop you or stop them from answering if we get close to that. I'm happy with that. Is there a process issue before we get into the detail? Okay, hold on. These are all process issues only. Okay, it'll be one, two, three.
I'd like to make a suggestion that given the number of questions I think all members have, that we allow members 5 minutes to ask back and forth like the advocate has just done, right? And when the 5 minutes is up, you move on to the next member. I think that way we'll get more clarity. It'll take 45 minutes. I've done the calculation. And if we have to cut into lunch, then we do so. But I honestly think that we're better than just asking two general questions. Thank you.
All right. Talk to that process issue, Mr. Swart and Mr. Mathango at this point. Swart and then Mathango.
We use that. No, it's a good suggestion and I support it. We did it when we had the NPA appear before us in the Justice Committee. It was very helpful to engage one-on-one. I think 5 minutes is helpful. Chair, I just wanted to know the status of the statement, whether the leader of evidence is going to hand it in or not. Is it handed into evidence, or I just wanted that sense of clarity. Thank you, Chair.
Chair?
Only on process, right?
Yes.
Okay.
No, mine, Chair, has to do with what you raised when you started the meeting in the morning, to the effect that if there are those people who may be in our meeting who have questions to raise, they would. I thought you said they would be given an opportunity, so I would have thought before members come in, I think it would be fair that those individuals, if they are present, are given the opportunity.
Honourable Khoza?
Chair, is there a specific reason why we don't have the supporting documentation? The annexures to the... Because it will be useful for us to refer to them.
All right, let's deal with the annexures. That question was raised with us yesterday afternoon. It's a whole arts liver file. It's a whole arts liver file, certainly in this case. But if members really want to have them, we will run them. But we have all the annexures for committee records. We thought that if the board wanted the same, we would make it available to the board. But to make it available to all of us might be costly. But if members insist, we could run it overnight. All right. And it seems like the suggestion of allowing 5 minutes is agreed upon, so we won't talk. So we won't talk on that one. Yes, he will respond to the statement. And of course, as we indicated earlier this morning, that members of the SABC board, if they wish to, will be allowed. Now, whether they are allowed first or last to respond, the suggestion is you are suggesting we allow them to respond first if they are members of the board, and then us later. That's what you're suggesting, sir. Okay. All right. I mean, either way, we'll still all have our 5 minutes. And you know the reason why I wanted to do the board last, but we can change it, is because once we take 5 minutes, because I had a thought of the same idea, the balance of the time would allow them, it might be more than 5 minutes, but if we gave them only 5 minutes, it might... So, I mean, either way, I don't have a problem. But I was not aware that there are members of the board that are present here at this meeting. They are. Are there board members that would want to... Members of the board, meaning the CEO, the CFO, and the COO, because those are the executive members of the board, and Professor Maguve. Are any of those individuals present here? Or their legal representatives, but they are the ones that would lead,
no.
Not the legal representatives.
There's no SABC here.
Thank you very much. Is that...
I just don't want us to have a situation where people would say, you had made a commitment, you didn't give us. But if they're not here, they know that they're supposed to be here, so I think then it's in order.
All right. Now the process issues are out of the way. I said we're going to learn as we go along. We're too tense, man. We really are too tense. Oh, you relax. Okay. I'm not saying make a noise, but I just... Can we then have an indication of members? You will be given 5 minutes.
Sorry,
and
please.
Ask your prior... Well, we'll get there. I beg your pardon. We'll get there. You'll be given 5 minutes, so you better prioritize your questions. We're not going to allow you to go over 5 minutes. If it's one question in 5 minutes, I'm comfortable. If it's 10 questions in 5 minutes, I'm comfortable, but prioritize them. Advocate Vanara, what is the legal status of the statement that you are referring to?
Chair, the statement is before the committee, and I would request that it be admitted as evidence before the inquiry, and it be marked as Annexure A1. Thank you.
Together with Annexures, one presumes as well.
Happiness? Thank you. Indication of people that would want to participate, members? Everybody? Okay. All right. No. Let's make this thing pragmatic and easier for me as the chair. For this one, we'll start with Honorable Mukwena and come this way. And the next time we'll start this side and go that way. The first shall be last and the last shall be first. So, Honorable Mukwena, you've got exactly 5 minutes and it's 11 o'clock now.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have too many questions, actually. Are you fine? I'm interested in the internal audit committee. You were chairperson. When you started as a chairperson of the committee, was the group, the current group, acting group GCEO, already appointed as acting?
Not at all. Not on time.
Was there any time in your tenure as the chairperson of the committee, was there at any point that he was then appointed as the group GCEO?
Not at all.
Okay. But you're saying that the SABC had an internal audit committee, which you were chairing?
Yes.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking is because there was a statement made by the GCEO yesterday that there is no such a body at the SABC, that he doesn't know of any such a body. He said he said this on TV yesterday. So you're confirming that there is an internal audit committee which the Auditor General also spoke of yesterday?
Yes. You must understand, I think he was doing semantics because you were saying internal audit committee. They call it, I think, audit is audit committee. Others call it audit performance committee. Others call it risk and audit committee. So I think, but we have the audit committee has been there all along. I've been there as an interim board member. I was the chairperson of the audit committee from the time of the interim board and this board.
Okay. Thank you very much. Second issue. The first meeting that you had with the minister, you say that she suggested that the COO be appointed as permanent as he had been acting for too long. At this point, were you in possession of the public protector's report?
Yes.
And then at the meeting, at the second meeting in which the COO was then appointed, in that night meeting that you said there was no agenda or you had been misled as to the agenda of the meeting, was the minister present at that meeting?
The minister was not present at that meeting, but she was around the SABC. She was, I think, waiting somewhere.
So she was at the SABC, but not at the meeting?
Yes.
Okay. When the COO was then appointed as permanent, this would have been done at the recommendation of the minister. You were, I'm just confirming, in possession of the public protector's report at the time.
Yes, we were busy working on it at the time.
Thank you. And then what was the relation between the current chairperson of the board and the board itself? And how would you characterize the then decline of the board into this dwindled form that we're now seeing of just one member? And in not so many words, how would you describe the reasons behind the leaving the dwindling of this board?
So that's your last question. You've got 5 minutes.
My last one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think more is more. We have to do with the governance issues. Governance falling apart. I mean, that's why the disintegration of the board and the type of leadership which you have.
Thank you. Because we're working as a team and nobody is doing personal, if there is a pressing question that because of practice you didn't slip it through to one of your colleagues and negotiated them to ask for it, because we're working as a team, we're not working as political parties here. We will move to you, sir, and go to the back, and the ladies, and come this way and that way.
Not your chair, right? You go to the back and then ladies.
No, men, no. Your 5 minutes starts now, sir.
Chair, thank you. Mr. Lubisi, you were... I think you've already responded to the question that you were a member or you were the chair of the audit committee. One would assume that in line with King 3, you had several risks, risk management, a host of risk issues which speaks to governance that you had to deal with. And one would also would assume that out of those you would have policy that are informed by the guideline that you find in King 3, something that would have been part of your direct responsibility, both as member of the risk committee as well as the chair. Just a confirmation.
Yes, we had done risk analysis was done, and there were risk registers.
And you are aware that risk management is not a bottom-up, but it's a top-down approach.
There are two types. I will say that the board can set the tone, but there are strategic risks, which are the responsibility of the board, and the operational risk is for management to handle.
Yes, that's execution. But the dictate comes from the board.
As a board, we give the tone, and we have our own. The strategic risks are the board's responsibility.
And SABC board had put all those risk indicators that it needed to be looking at and making sure that it remains on its radar screen.
Yes, they were identified risks. Yes, they were there.
The things that you have raised as you said that the collapse or the lapse or the fall of governance, just don't remember the name that you used. Had you identified those things in advance as the risk committee and advised the board about?
I wouldn't be sure what are the top 10 risks, but I mean, obviously, the governance review is a good governance practice. The board needs to have those reviews of independent directors and the committees. You have to do that on an annual basis. It's a standard acceptable practice, a good practice, basically what I can say.
No, there are specific matters. Look, you were not, there was a board before you, a risk committee before you, your time. There are things that in the previous board you would have picked up that you needed to look at during your tenure. Were there any risk during your tenure looked at which had occurred during the previous board period.
Yeah.
To which you had advised the board about them.
I wouldn't specifically know. This is if I had a risk reached in front of me, I would be in a position to respond and say that yes. But governance obviously was an issue at SAEPC. There's always been an issue. So, and I think the reason why that governance review was presented to both the interim board and the new board, the belief that those things will be useful to the board as such. But what I'm saying is that for us as a board, say that we are a risk to SAPC, I don't think we might have classified ourselves.
No, I've not said that. Yes, but one would think that when governance fall...
Last question, sir.
Okay. You would have... I mean, those things would have been very crucial, including the board members, including external players. One would have thought that some of those things you'd have picked up and advised the board about them.
I'm very much convinced that the board was aware of that. And I think the previous board, it was fortunate some of the members of the interim board became in the permanent board. That is why the same chairperson moved as an interim to the permanent. She has raised it. She has asked the service provider to come and make a presentation to this board of that report, so that, and we have started a process of doing another review and also to check whether those recommendations are being implemented or not. So, I mean, we were conscious of the fact that there's a need for, to jack up governance.
Honorable Swart? No.
Is my time over?
Yes, long time. Honorable Swart?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Lubisa. I just want to take you directly to the meeting. Just to confirm, you were appointed in March 2013, and around about July 2014, you had the meeting with the minister, where certain issues were raised about the appointment, the permanent appointment of Mr. Motsweneng, and there were some concerns raised by the minister that board members had certain problems. And at that, on paragraph 15 of your statement, during discussions at board meetings, you were seen to be one of the members favoring implementation of the public protector's recommendations that steps be taken against Mr. Motsweneng because he was alleged to have misled the SABC. Then, suddenly after that, it appears that the issues of conflict of interest were raised. Was it not strange to you that those issues were never ever raised before, you having been appointed since March 2013? And would it be correct to assume that it was only because you opposed the implementation of the public protector's report that the issues of the conflict of interest were raised?
No, it didn't surprise me. I knew why it was raised. That just to do with the appointment and the public protector's report. So I was not surprised. I knew why it was.
And are you firmly, do you believe that there is no substance to any allegations of conflict of interest? And is that the subject of your litigation that you're impending relating to your unlawful removal as a board member?
I don't have doubt about that. That's why, we were going to court if this committee was not set up. We've put our papers, we have a court date. So I don't have doubt about that. And it's unfortunate that the people who let us down is the portfolio committee, because even itself did nothing. We wrote to them, they never protected us. So we're just exposed like that and left to hang. So I have very much confidence. I mean, I have evidence. They don't have evidence. I mean, SABC didn't come to me and say, we have completed, we have audited this company. This is the set of financial statements which you have signed. Where did I sign? So I don't have doubt that there's no substance to the allegations. They didn't put any evidence. I mean, it's just a minutes of the back committee. the BAC committee, nothing else. They don't have anything. They didn't even approach the companies themselves to say that, okay, these companies are confirming that what we're saying. So, I'm confident that there's no conflict. I can go to court.
Mr. Lubisi, just also as the chairman of the audit committee, you raised certain concerns about the issue relating to the public protector's report and the need for possible further forensic reports. And could that also not have been a reason why you were removed from that audit report? Audit committee.
Yes, I think it's obviously part of that. And we had a belief that what the public protector's report was saying, there might be more. So wanted to look at that, especially in case of the unauthorized irregular expenditures, wanted to look at this.
Thank you. Lastly, Mr. Lubisi.
The last question.
Yes. The issue relating to the legal opinion as to the minister's power to remove you as a board member and the portfolio committee, who you indicated didn't assist you then, the previous portfolio committee, but there's obviously a difference in legal approach, and you attach that legal opinion to the your documents, where it's clear that there's a difference between the minister's view and Parliament's view, where we say it's the National Assembly and President that can remove a member of the board and not the minister. Would you comment on that, please?
I mean, that is our view. I mean, our view is that we have not been appointed by a board. We have been appointed by the president. So only the president can, it's logical that the president have to remove you through the recommendation of the National Assembly. So that's our view. Because the appointment goes like that. The way the appointment
Thank
is
you,
done.
Sir. Thank you, sir. Honorable Khoza, I know we're going to come from the back. Your 5 minutes starts now.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Lubisi, I just want you to clarify quickly for me. In paragraph 6 of your statement, you are making reference to the dissolution of the board. How many members were remaining at the time when it was dissolved?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Ngubane board here. Yeah. I think all of them resigned, and then an interim board.
There was not a single one left?
No,
thank
all
you.
Of them resigned.
Okay, thank you. The next question is that the relationship between the qualifications of the former chair of the board and the findings of the public protector, is there any relationship to you towards the attitude that was adopted by the board towards the remedial action of the public protector?
I wouldn't link the two because the similarities that, the acting at that point was alleged not to have fake qualifications, to have claimed to have qualifications, and the previous chairperson had the similar problems. So obviously, if we are swimming in the same pot, we'll defend each other.
Thank you. Now, yesterday we heard the evidence that was given by the Auditor General, which was very damning. And one of the primary objectives of this committee is to really ascertain the status, the financial status and sustainability of SABC. Now, you are a chartered accountant and you are a former member of SABC board who presided as the chairman of the Audit Committee and member of Human Resources Committee. How would you characterize the financial position and management of SABC? Especially, I want you to comment specifically on the quality of the information, because as the chairman of the audit committee, there were possibly contracts, there were some information that would have come to you, and if you could comment on that, sir.
I think there's no problem with the quality. I think a lot of work has been done. If you look at it, by the time, I think for the 2 years, the organization had a disclaimer opinion, which was one of the worst. But a lot of work has been done with the audit committee and management to try and address that. We had
a plan, a three-year plan to move to unqualified at that point. And I think we're moving in the right direction. I think there's a lot of improvement in relation to a lot of things, but there's a lot, our concern, even at that point, which I think is still the same, it was more on the unauthorized and irregular expenditure, because it's where you can hide fraud. So in that area, it was our concern. And during that time, I think in case of the other things, is your cash flow issues. I think we had good people who were very good from the executive side in managing cash flows, which I don't know. I don't know the financial status. I've never been involved with SAPC since I left. So I don't know their financial status now. I can't comment on the current state. But the state which we inherited, when SAPC was coming from a difficult financial position, the cash flow was a very big issue at that time, which I think if finances are not managed properly, that will still remain the same. And you can get a position where it collapses altogether if it's not watched properly.
Anyway, I can tell you that from the AG's report, that situation is retrogressing. Because 2014-2015, there was improvement. We are absolutely correct from the prior year. But 2015-2016, that position is retrogressing. The irregular expenditure increased, and the reliability of information, the AG said it leaves much to be desired. But that's not for you. The other thing that I need to know from you, there is a,
that will be the last one,
to know that there is absence of performance management system. How are management bonuses determined in the absence of the performance management system? And finally, the heavy reliance on SAPC, on consultants, points to the weak internal controls, and you were the auditor at the time. Or what is your view on that? And yeah, if you could comment on that, please. Thank you.
Okay, in relation to the use of consultants, yes, we have used consultants a lot, especially in the finance area during the time. We had a plan, if you can go through the minutes of the audit committee, of capacitating the finance division, because there were a lot of vacancies, so some things couldn't happen because of the internal controls were falling apart because there were no warm bodies to implement them. And then we had a plan where we that management must fill the positions. And we even provided a specific a budget for them to do that. So when I left, there was a huge process of trying to replace the consultants with the internal staff. So that process was on. I don't know if it stopped or the situation is still the same. But we didn't anticipate it to be the same. That's the reason why we had a plan that the finance must be prioritized in case of filling position, because it's where the engine of the whole organization is. If it collapses, the organization will collapse.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable Olive. I'm saying we can ask it, but otherwise we're going to be inconsistent.
Okay.
All right, but I think jot it down, because we will, if it's an important question. I mean, we're not going to be dogmatic, but jot it down. Otherwise, we'll just become inconsistent and destabilize. Loliwe?
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Lubisi, whilst you were a board member, was it a common practice to absorb those who have acted in positions for a long time? And how is long determined?
It was not a practice. I mean, we just have this one instance of the CEO. But it's very important to mention that subsequent, before I left, we had a problem because, as I said, that there are structural issues there. Who appoints who in case of the executives? Previously, the board used to appoint the executives. But I think the memorandum of incorporation was changed, now executives were appointing themselves, and the board was not involved. And it became a problem because positions were no more advertised, and people were just appointed without advertisement being done. I think that is a practice which has happened subsequent to my departure.
In your statement in paragraph 19, you are alluding to the fact that the inputs of the minister were not audible. Is there any other form of evidence that you have of what was said by the minister in the meeting when the transcripts were not audible?
You must understand that I'm saying that based on the transcript which I got from SABC. It's not the tape which I listened. I asked them for the transcript because I had concerns. You still remember that I say they were making allegations. So I wanted to listen to them and hear what was the response of the minister in relation to that. That was the reason why. And the transcript is there in the documentation there. You will see yourself where the minister speak. You can't hear her only, but you can hear anyone else. So what I'm alleging.
You are further indicating somewhere in your statement, sorry that I did not indicate the paragraph, that decisions were taken without proper documents. Did you challenge this whilst you were still a board member?
Yes, we challenged it a lot. That's why we're taken out.
The last question I have for you is to say, how many board members heeded the call of the minister, which is captured in paragraph 22, where she was saying you must respond to your conscience and resign if people are leaking information? How many board members heeded to this call?
I think you must have a background of it also. I'm sorry, Chair, to give you a little bit of a background. The minister wrote us letters, not all of us, not all the board members. It was specific board members. Some, her team was left aside. So there were some of us.
Please don't lose me. Who are those in her team and who are those not in her team?
What I'm saying that I think the members who received the letters are the ones who are not in the team because they're the ones who specifically received the letters. The ones which I know received the letters, it was Professor Khumalo, it's myself, it's Rachel Kalidas, it's Busmus Mavuso, and Comrades Elites Zinda, and yeah, I think the five of us, the people whom I remember received the letters.
Time up. Thank you, Honorable Waters.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lubisi. Can I ask with regards to the Audit Committee, do you keep minutes of the Audit Committee?
Yes, the minutes are there.
And so they're available for us to get from the SABC?
Yes, there.
Thank you. Then on paragraph 13, when the minister raised the issue of the COO not being permanently appointed, did anyone raise the matter with the minister that there actually was a public protector report that highlighted Mr. What's-her-name's qualifications? Or did everyone keep quiet?
I think it was not meant for comment.
So no one raised the fact that there was this public protector report?
At that point, I don't think she was raising for us to comment. You understand?
Okay.
It's like part of the outreach.
All right. Then at the meeting where the board voted for Mr. Mosseneng to be appointed as the COO permanently, which members came out in favor of the public protector's findings? You must have discussed it.
I think the members are the same members which I indicated who got letters, the people who got letters.
All those, okay, so those ones that got letters, thank you. By the way, did you ever get your report from the report sent by Mrs. Caldenas to the minister? Did you ever see sight of that report?
No, I never got it. When I requested it, she indicated that only the minister can give that.
Okay.
So I have never seen it even today.
All right. You talk about the Governance Committee as well as the Governance and Nominations Committee. Is it the same committee? All right. And you say in paragraph 62, when they took the decision with regards to yourself, it wasn't Koretz. Could you tell us how many people serve on that committee and how many actually were present when the decision was made against you?
The people who serve in that committee is all the chairperson of the committees. So we have audit, we have HR, we have the other two committees. So ethics, we have plus or minus five or six committees. So there will be plus or minus six. But you must take note, I think this is important, that the chairperson of the audit committee was not sitting in the governance committee. So excluded the chairperson of the audit committee. So the other, but the terms of reference are there, I think, in the documentation. Which I think that it requires three members to be a quorum. There were two members when that decision was taken. And if you go through the minutes, of the special board where the late Hope was taken out, you will see that it was indicated that it was not correcting, and then it was going to be ratified after the appointment of the new members. And that ratification didn't happen before the special board meeting. That's one of our contention, that it was an illegal recommendation because it was taken in a meeting which was not correcting.
Which were the two members that participated in the meeting?
It's Professor Magube and Leah Kumal.
Okay, thank you. And then as far as the board meeting that took the decision with regards to suspend yourself, there were six votes in favor, three against, and one abstained. What is the quorum of, what would be a quorum for the board at this stage? Because some people have already been resigned. So I'm just trying to get an idea of what was a quorum. If 10 people voted, what would constitute a quorum?
I think I think I'm not an expert in relation to what the quorum will be and what the quorum was at that point, whether it was correcting or not. I'm not sure at that point, but I think all the directors were there, whoever were still board members.
Okay.
Were there at the specific meeting.
All right. Thank you. Chair, that is all my questions. Thank you.
No. Honourable Van Dam. You're eating up your time. Your time starts now.
Thanks, Mr. Lubisi. You indicate in Section 13 that the minister attended a meeting of the board. Did the previous minister, when you were appointed, Mr. Yunus Karim, ever attend any board meetings?
Yes, we don't call them board meetings. We call them bilaterals. We meet the minister as a board.
Mm.
You will always do. It doesn't matter what board you serve, as long as it's a public entity, because you have a minister whom you're serving under. So you work with the minister. So,
right.
Yes, it happened.
Okay, in Section 12, you say that right from the start, Minister Mutambi adopted quite a hostile attitude towards the board. So at the bilateral meeting in July 2014, which would have just been after she's been appointed the minister after the 2014 election, what was her demeanor? Was she aggressive when she suggested that Mr. Motsoeneng be appointed permanently? Was it a suggestion or was it firmly put? How did you feel as sitting in that meeting? Did you feel that you were being told you have to appoint Mr. Motsoeneng permanently?
No, honestly, I took it as a comment. I thought it was not going to happen. It would never happen. I mean, I took it as a comment that have you.
What was her demeanor?
I don't think it was hostile. But I never expected it to happen. I took it as it was a comment and a view.
So if you say right from the start the minister adopted a hostile attitude towards the board, what are you basing that on? Instead of saying that she said in the National Assembly that the number of board members needed to be reduced, I mean, that alone couldn't, you can't say from that's a hostile attitude. I mean, how, on what basis did you say she was hostile?
It's based on subsequent events. You still remember? So after the one-on-one, I mean, the one-on-one was based on what I can say that is an illegal process, in the sense that you can't, a company secretary cannot evaluate us. and write issues about us and give it to a minister to action. You understand? So, and those subsequent letters were not nice letters. So it was not love letters. So it was.
Gotcha. I'm particularly interested in the conflict between the Companies Act, the Broadcasting Act, and the Memorandum of Incorporation. It seems in my mind that the board and the minister pick and choose from each depending on what suits their situation. So in my mind, for Parliament's purposes, the Broadcasting Act is the act that governs SABC. If there's conflict with the Companies Act or the Memorandum of Incorporation, the Broadcasting Act takes precedence. So when you were dismissed in terms of the Companies Act and not the Broadcasting Act, which required a process in Parliament and then for the President to then dismiss you. What was the view when you raised this with the Minister and the rest of the board? I know that there was a legal opinion from Parliament which stated that your removal in terms of the Companies Act was wrong and it needed to happen in terms of the Broadcasting Act. So in your conversations or correspondence with the Minister and the board, what view did they express about your dismissal using the Companies Act and not the Broadcasting Act?
I think it will be very important for you to go through the letters which the ministers wrote to us. There were two or three. The first one was saying that we must listen to our conscience and resign. And then the second one was saying that we must give reasons why we should not be taken out as board members. If that means if the reasons were not acceptable, an inquiry was going to be set up. So I think in my statements you realize that I say that, okay, the minister acknowledged at a certain point that she can't remove us. I think if you go through the letters, so she acknowledged that she can't remove us. But I think that process of the minister trying to take us stop at a certain point, and now it was delegated to Magube to take us out. And that's how I view it. And then Magube now chasing us with it. Magube's letters start coming now. And then we were taken out. So there was a process. I have the strongest belief that we were targeted from the beginning. That's the reason that was the first meeting which we were attacked. And then it didn't take long for us to be taken out. So it was a process.
Thank you, sir.
No.
I'm just the messenger. We will sharpen our questioning technique by the end of the time. Honorable Chauke.
I'm not going to ask you a lot of questions. I'm going to ask you to speak on the issues I'm going to ask you. One question, nothing else. But the 4 minutes will cover the rest of your response. Your understanding of the remedial actions of the public protector, because you say that the reason that you are taken out is because wanting to implement the findings. Can you share with this committee your understanding and what were those issues, together with the issues which were identified by the Auditor General, because we are the chairperson of the Internal Audit Committee. Can you share with the committee what were the issues that were identified and what was your position as the Internal Audit Committee with regard to those issues? What was your position on those issues? Can you just share with us?
Okay, my position in relation to the recommendation, the issues were more HR orientated, lying about qualifications, salary increases without a process, appointment of people without processes. So 90%, I can say, were more HR orientated. And I think it would be very good to get the minutes of the HR committee, the recommendation which the HR committee made to the board, because each committee was given a mandate to recommend. And then our recommendation is very simple, that there should be a disciplinary process. I mean, that was the only thing which you needed for the acting chief operation officer. That was the only one of the biggest remedies. and anything which was flowing from the recommendation, it has to, most of them has to do with him. So if you run that disciplinary process, you'll be in a position to resolve some of the issues which has to do. The only challenge with the recommendation which we had as an audit committee, myself, was that there were some issues which required, further work. Things like, say, you recover some monies because someone did ABC. You need to work it out. How much is it? So, before you do the disciplinary processes, there are some processes which I think needed to be done to sharpen the evidence which you need to present at the disciplinary hearings. And the processes, how legal is it to recover those? The legality and there are some work which I think needed to implement some of them. But there are some which were straightforward. You lie about qualification. You understand what I'm trying to say? So that's the reason why you dissected it to the different committees so that they can interrogate it and come with the details. So that's my view. But the key thing is that there should be disciplinary consequence management for whoever was involved in the process. That's the short answer.
Honorable Killen.
I think in this regard, I just need to ask the Mr. Luisi, can you tell us, you were there when the new board was appointed, how did the board provide facilities for Professor Maguve as a person with disabilities? Did the board provide any specific equipment for him, or did you have to have everything translated in Braille? Did he do it himself? Can you please just inform us?
I think the company secretary will be in a better position to comment about that. But I think my memory serves me well, we've acquired an equipment for documentation to be, I think we have a resolution where we've agreed that we should get an equipment for him. And I think that equipment was acquired so that documentation can be converted.
Thank you. Secondly, Chair, the public protector released a report in February, and the meeting with the minister when the COO was appointed took place in July of the same year. When first was the public protector's report tabled? You indicated that it went to different subcommittees, but when was it formally tabled in the board? Can you perhaps recall that? Was it an ordinary meeting, or was there a special meeting called for that purpose?
I don't remember as to when. I should only remember it by going through them. But it was a process. You must remember that there were a lot of issues covered into it. And I think the issue of splitting it into different committees was the best one, that it received the necessary attention. And you must remember that the board is not sitting there. There's quarterly meetings. You have special meetings only if it's necessary here and there. So I can't remember exactly as to when, but it was a process. It was a process. During that time, when the minister came in, the process was not yet finalized at that point. And the committees haven't finalized their work, and it was in progress.
Just clarity, you said that you had this bilateral. Was the bilateral called by the Office of the Minister, and was it then converted into a special board meeting, or how did it take place? Did the meeting first take place and thereafter there was a bilateral with the Minister? How did it in practice work? And did she at that stage say that you need to appoint the acting COO permanently?
When a new minister comes in, he will set up meetings with his entities which serve under him or her. So it was the first meeting which we had with the minister. And now and then the minister will meet with the if there's a need, with the board now and then, depending on the minister. And then you have the AGM, where the minister have definitely has to come. So there will be, different meetings with the ministers, with the minister at different points. But this specific one was the first meeting where the minister was going to introduce herself to ourselves. It was not a board meeting where the boards have to sit, and then you can sit, and then sometimes the minister come at the, but this was a specific meeting where she was going to introduce herself and us meeting her for the first time.
So it was not at that July meeting that with her that you actually went ahead to appoint the acting COO permanently?
No. The July meeting was the introduction of the minister. And then subsequent to that, this special board meeting was called. The minister was not part of that meeting, the special board. But when the meeting was called, her name was used in what the meeting was all about. So it was a board meeting.
You earlier indicated that she was around. Was she greeting the members of the board after the appointment?
If my memory serves me well, I think she came at the end and addressed us at the end. I think the minutes will indicate it.
Would the minutes reflect objections by those members that have now been fingered as the troublemakers and their objection to appointing a person that was in fact fingered?
I'm afraid you're not going to make it. You haven't even finished your question. I don't think you're going to make it. So please list that question. Really, otherwise it's going to make my life absolutely difficult. Two questions from my side, sir. You are the chair of the audit committee. And is there a policy that regulates the record keeping of minutes and reports for the audit committee? Do you have a policy at the SABC when you were there?
I think there's document control policy. I think it's there.
Now, I'm asking that question because I would have assumed that audit committee reports should be kept for 7 years or 3 years. I'm saying in your understanding, was there anything like that? I'm asking you specifically because we requested the internal audit reports and we were told that the board does not have those reports. That's the reason why they can't give us those reports. Is that a valid reason from your experience?
No, I think record keeping is well done there. There's audios, all meetings are recorded, and all minutes are minuted, and all minutes are electronically sent to the members of the committees and the board meetings. So I think that there's proper record keeping. All the committee meetings are there.
I'm asking that question because a lawyer wrote to us saying that those reports aren't there. The second question that I'd like to ask you, sir, as chair of the audit committee, could you give me an example of contents that would appear in your report that would threaten the SABC's commercial interest? Don't go into the detail. In the audit report, are there contents that you think, if made public, would threaten the commercial interest of the SABC? I don't mean specifics. I'm saying, is there a possibility of that type of thing in the audit reports that you did whilst you were head of the audit committee?
No, I don't think so, because most of the things which are handled in the audit committee are public knowledge. The internal audit reports and the audit report from the AG, it's arising from the work of the audit committee. Most of the work is what you publish at the end of the day.
Again, for the record, Lucky Tekiso, who represents the board chairperson, on us requesting those documents, responded to us that those documents will not be provided
on the basis of privilege and because their disclosure may negatively impact the SABC's commercial interest. We're talking here about the Chief Audit Executive report. That's the reason given to us. Are you saying that those are not valid reasons for not supplying those documents to this committee?
Yes, I don't think it's valid because in those in the audit committee meeting, you'll have the AG as part of the meeting, so it's not an inside person. So I don't think it's so closed and closely guarded because you have outsiders there and then you have outside members of the audit committee who are not necessarily board members. So I don't think there's anything which can threaten the existence of an organization because someone has seen audit committee documentations.
Mr. Lubisi, thank you very much. That comes to the end of this session. Once again, thanks for coming here. And if needs be, at some further point, we reserve the right to call you back. But as for now, I think members will be able to use whatever they think was useful from that interaction for our report. Just to remind members that at the end of the day, it's us that will take the content for the report. We are not compelled to take all or to remove all, but I thought it was very useful to clarify certain issues. Mr. Lubisi, thank you very much. Can we have, no, before I allow you a 2-minute break, let me ask the boss. Oh, I see. The boss indicates there's a time for a 5-minute tea break, and then we'll move on to the next witness immediately thereafter. 5 minutes tea break, and we'll move on to the next. The tea is served with. The tea is for everybody. Everybody, the tea is at the back here. Everybody's welcome for a cup of tea.